I don't want to do that much nach tonight. I'm going to do a lot of Ripsodok. I have an outline. You can follow either place. I have an outline on page 7 and 8 of what I'm going to say. And then I have the whole Ripsodok with the numbers of my outline, numbers 1 through 43, in square print. In square boxes next to the size of the page. So you can follow either place. I'm not sure how much I'm actually referring to inside. I like to do as much as outside as possible based on my outline. And Rav Tzadok here talks about our parak and about a great length about Shoal and Shoal's sin here and what Shoal is responsible for. And basically, we begin from the beginning of the parak, which is the first word in the parak, which we have photocopy, first words of the parak, which we have photocopy on page 1 in Pasuk Beis. Shmuel's Nevuah to Shoal is Kama Hashem Tzvokos, Bakati Tzashah Sa Molek Yisrael. Now, there are two very significant points here. First point, Rav Tzadok raises, actually, second point, Rav Tzadok raises, but first point of the Pasuk is that there's the first Nevuah in all of Tanakh where it says Kama Hashem Tzvokos. No other Nevuah earlier in Tanakh does he use the name Tzadik Beis Aleph Vav Tav. It's your first place. That's point number one. Second point number two is that the use of the word Pakadati. We know that the Simon Yosef gave to Klal Yisrael that they would be, and how they would know that they would be redeemed by the purported redeemer, and their body were many, was the use of the word Pakadati. Pakod Pakadati. So Pakadati, says Reb Tzadok, always represents the Jewish history, the opening of a unique and new chapter in Jewish history. So that is significant in that the word Pakadati is used here in conjunction with the eradication of Amalek. So obviously the eradication of Amalek is something new and unique. And what was that supposed to be? Says Reb Tzadok, normally the Hashgach of Hashem requires Goyim to be used. By that we mean that every nation among which we find ourselves generally has some good aspect to it, and that good aspect we're supposed to learn and use, and in fact that nation and its constituents can have a Chayek Olam Haba, can have a best in this world based on their contribution to the unique mission of Klal Yisrael and serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu and their supporting status. However, Amalek is not like that. Amalek is unique among all the nations of the world in that the Hashgach of Hashem dictates that the only purpose of Amalek, the only good Amalekite, as we know, is a dead Amalekite, is to destroy them. Now, as I said, this is not the purpose of Esav in general. Or Goyim in general, even Esav in general. The purpose of Esav, as Yitzchak Avinu told Esav, is that you should be an Eved, right? Esachicha Tavod. Esav in its totality has a potential to be an Eved to Am Yisrael, to serve Klal Yisrael. In fact, the Romans, Lasi Lava, will come, Chazal tells me, Imsechta Avodazor, and Seita Kosh Bochu, we built the roads for the Jews, we built the bathhouses for the Jews. Everything they did is for the Jews, and the truth is that they're right. Everything they did is for the Jews, just that they didn't do it for the right intention. That's why they're punished. However, that's in fact the case. Esav was created in order to be a servant of Hashem, a servant of Am Yisrael, and they do serve Am Yisrael. There's a direct proportion between the level of connectedness in Olam Haba of Klal Yisrael to a nation, or of a nation, more correctly, of another nation to Klal Yisrael, to their connection in Olam Hazeh. Now, it's to the extent that a nation in Olam Hazeh connects to HaKadosh Baruch Hu via Klal Yisrael, by serving Klal Yisrael and serving as the support staff for Klal Yisrael, in that proportion, they will merit Olam Haba. There's a correlation. And there's Gemara which he quotes him, talking about Antoninus. Antoninus bowed down in front of Rebbe. Antoninus was the Roman governor in Tver. I guess he lived in Tveria or wherever Rebbe lived at the time. And Antoninus bowed down in front of Rebbe, laid down on the ground so Rebbe could use him as a step to get up to a couch of some sort. And Rebbe said, he asked Rebbe whether he's going to get Olam Haba. The Rebbe said, yes, you will get Olam Haba. And at this Maisa, in this Maisa, Reb Tzadok finds, the Madrega of Goyim for Olam Haba. He says that the Goyim will be, it's also Gemara Navodazorat, Afiron Beis, the Gemara is telling us that the Goyim who serve Jews will serve also to be with Jews, again, supporting role in Olam Haba. and our Tanninim supported Rebbe in this world, our Tanninim who have the merit of supporting Rebbe in some way, shape, or form. Reb Tzadok says, of course, we don't know exactly in the world to come. It's interesting, says Reb Tzadok, even though our Tanninim posed it as a question. Rabinus posed it as a question that he should be a platform under Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi himself in the world to come. And remember, Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi did not promise him that. Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi said, yes, you'll get to Olam Haba. Nonetheless, Reb Tzadok, this is a very Tzadokian principle, nonetheless, there's Reb Tzadok that if a tefillah, any tefillah, ever davened, it has some sort of impact. You know, there are two answers as to why. I've told you this in the past. The two answers as to why sometimes we perceive that tefillahs weren't answered. The standard answer, the non-Tzadokian answer, is that sometimes God answers no. Reb Tzadok's answer is that it's always answered yes, but not necessarily in the proportion that you wanted. In other words, if you wanted it to 50 pounds of yes, you might get 5 pounds of yes, but there's no such thing as a tefillah which isn't answered. And Kavachomer says, Reb Tzadok, if a tefillah appears in the Talmud, if in Talmud Babli you find some of these words mentioned, even a goy, they must have some major significance. Otherwise, how in the world do they get into Rosh Baal Peh? So it says, if Antoninus requested, and it is recorded, that he be a support, not just down in the world to come, but under Rebbe, so to speak, then there must be Mekuyim, that must be fulfilled in some way in the world to come. And ideally, that's how all Goyim should serve. However, the core... That's how all Goyim should serve. The core... Ayin Nefesh, Shivin Nefesh of Klal Yisrael, who went down to Egypt, thus represents the 70 Umos Olam. There's a correlation there. 70 and 70. Each member of the Umos Olam, I'm sorry, each nation of the world, corresponds to an element of Klal Yisrael, and Klal Yisrael is supposed to uplift those elements. Amalek. I don't know what Reb Tzadok does with it. It sounds like he's making Amalek a 71st nation. So I'm not sure how it configures with the 70. Perhaps because Amalek is a subdivision of Esav. I don't know. But in any event, he says, Amalek has no use for good. It cannot be used for good. What was the purpose in creating Amalek? To provide Bechira. Were there to be no power of evil in the world, there would be no Bechira. There would be no choice for negative. Amalek was created in order to provide the Bechira. Prior to Amalek's existence, Bechira was all packed into the Nisayan of Adam Rishon and the Nachash. Were Adam Rishon able to overcome the Nisayan with the Nachash, were he at that point to not have taken from the fruit, then there would have been no more necessity for Bechira, for Nisayan, forever after. That would have been it. One Nisayan for all time would have sufficed. However, since precisely because Adam Rishon muffed up, and that Bechira did not come out properly, so therefore all Bechira for all time was necessary, and instead of having the evil packed into one being, into one entity in the Nachash, it was packed into an entire nation, the nation of Amalek. So the side of good is represented, obviously, by Klal Yisrael, and their Bechira, to be Toa and do the wrong thing, comes from Amalek. So Amalek is not just a symbol, I want to make this clear. Amalek is not just a symbol of evil, but rather, and Amalek is not just a power, an evil power, but Amalek is the pervasive power of evil to influence us. It is the source of evil in the world, not just to combat Am Yisrael, but also to entice Am Yisrael. You see what we're saying? Amalek is, again, it's not just something out there, distinct, evil, but rather it's trying to make us evil as well. It's not just trying to destroy the Jewish nation by killing them, it's trying to get the Jewish nation, perhaps even more importantly, to sin. Either or, as far as Amalek is concerned, I guess, either purpose is served. Right. Amalek is a living Yetzirah. Just like the Nachash was a living Yetzirah, a physical and living embodiment of Yetzirah, so too Amalek is a physical living embodiment of Yetzirah. That is precisely the correlation between Amalek and Nachash. Okay, we're going to take a coffee break now. Ultimately, HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu, tells Klal Yisrael, when he'll be able to eradicate Amalek. It says, "Baniach Hashem lekecho l'cham mikol evecho misaviv." Obviously, if you talk about eradicating the source of evil, you have to really get work your way up the ladder a little bit to work at the source of evil and to destroy them. So in essence, not even necessarily something, a task which one can be completed by ourselves in this world, but rather will require us to have Mashiach. Now, not here, interestingly enough, says the Tzaddik, not necessarily Mashiach ben David, but Mashiach ben Yosef. That's where Shaul comes in. And there's the explanation. He says, Shaul was akin to Mashiach ben Yosef. Shaul, we know, Kaven Shana, Shaul b'machus, Shana was free of all sin. The Mashiach ben Yosef, the trait of Shevet Yosef, the trait of Shevet, the daughter's sons of Rachel, is to be free of all sins of Taiva, free of all sins of Nus, to be perfected in their Sur Meirah and staying away from bad things. Shaul was akin to Mashiach ben Yosef. In fact, Binyamin himself, the father of the tribe, was one of those who Chazal tells he died be'etiel shel nachash. He died only because of the counsel of the serpent. He had no sins. All he had was what almost all human beings have, a little residual taiva. David HaMelech says about his father Yishai, was one of the others of the four who died be'etiel shel nachash, that he also had taiva, although he never actually sinned a sin. He had taiva. In other words, for instance, when he indulged in sensual pleasures, he had a shtickel hanah besides the shem shamayim, which of course is an unbelievably high madrega, which we can't perceive, but that's the way the Gemara defines it. Gemara says that they had a little bit of taiva. Binyamin was one of those. Interesting medrash, Reb Tzadik B'Gazam, from Brachos Rabba, Parsha Ayin Alef, Ostes, that Eliyahu HaNavi is from Shevet Binyamin. Eliyahu HaNavi takes the trait of Binyamin to an even greater extent. He is completely full of sin, free of sin, to such an extent that he taka lives forever. He transcends the death, which came about as a result of the taiva of Adam Arishon for the tree, and he completely overcomes that taiva, even, forget about sins, but even turn taiva, and he lives forever. But there's a quid pro... That's one, but one understanding is that he's a Kohen, that he's Pinchas, but another understanding is that Eliyahu is from Binyamin, and another understanding yet is that he's from God. There's a whole medrash there where he's from. So, the Tzaddik is taking the tact that he's from Binyamin, that's what he's trying to explain, according to this understanding. But he says it's like a fascinating thing. This is brilliant. He says, you gotta understand, therefore, the correlation between Binyamin, or Yosef, Rachel, and Amalek. Amalek, when they came to Klal Yisrael, the first time, it says they cut off the milos of Klal Yisrael and threw the bris milos up in the air and said, look, this is what you want, God. Eliyahu HaNavi is the Malach HaBris. He comes to each bris mila. Right, you have a Kisa Shelio. There's a correlation there. What is the correlation, says Reb Tzaddik? He says, Eliyahu HaNavi is known as a Kanoi. He's zealous. He says himself, Kano Kinesi Kinas Hashem Tzvakos. Kina is in fact the power which causes a person to refrain from sin. Zealous, meticulous, jealous, upguarding of the law. In fact, a person who has a kinner personality is the antithesis of a taiva personality. He's very, perhaps a strong temper, but in any event, he's very, very controlled and very, very, aloof, separate, distinct. That was Eliyahu's kino. It was a kino of Kedusha, to meticulously avoid any possible taiva whatsoever. And it worked. And that's part of the bris mila. The bris mila is to afford a Jew the possibility of avoiding Avera. The bris mila is to uplift that organ of the individual in order to make a person a higher level of restraint, of refraining from illicit relationships. Amalek comes and he takes that and he says, baloney. He says, these Jews, they're no more special and no more restrained than anybody else. In other words, what Eliyahu comes to instill that concept of restraint, Amole comes to deny. And vice versa, that which Amole comes to deny, that the Jews are any more special, restrained, and holier than anybody else, Elio comes specifically to ensure. There is the interplay between Elio and Amalek, which is the same interplay in a larger sense between Binyamin and Amalek, because Elio is from Shevet Binyamin. That trait and that trait fight each other. And that's why you find that Mashiach ben Yosef is the one to stand opposite Amalek. And that's why Shaul is the one to stand opposite Amalek. That trait of Shevet Binyamin. However, says Reb Tzadok, that's only superficial, and it doesn't necessarily work. After all, after Mashiach ben Yosef, or Eliyahu Navi, right, which according to Reb Tzadok, what could even say are similar people, right, similar concepts, right, Mashiach ben Yosef and Eliyahu from Shevet Binyamin, there's a similarity there, and perhaps their roles complement each other, perhaps it's one or the other, I don't know. I'm not sure exactly how we understand those things, but there's a connection there. But there are two ways of dealing with the Yetzirah. There's one way of dealing with the Yetzirah by suppression, which the Mekubalim call Iskafya, to suppress. And one way of dealing with the Yetzirah is by sublimation, to change over. What the Mekubalim call Isapacha, to change, to overturn. Those two ways of dealing with the Yetzirah are the ways of Yosef and the ways of Yehuda. Yosef subjugates his Yetzirah. He suppresses it. He's an Iskafya personality. David uplifts, channels, sublimates the Yetzirah, uses his passion, L'shem Shamayim. That's Yisapacha. Chazal tells another beautiful point here of Tzadok. He says here that Chazal tell us in it doesn't bring down here where the source is, but Chazal tells that Shaul was called Shaul because Hamalchus Chaytza Sheula Biyado. The kingship was borrowed by him. We mentioned a couple weeks ago that one could interpret Shaul, Lashon Shaul, that he had the concept of Yazkir Yom HaMisa down pat. But Chazal say that Shaul means that he borrowed the Malchus. So, what does that mean? In that we find Shaul's downfall. Shaul's pitfall. And by the way, I'm up to point number 15 for those who are following. Shaul borrowed the kelim of Isapacha. He wanted to borrow, he wanted to make use of the possibility of uplifting and sublimating. That's called borrowed because it wasn't his midah, it was David's midah, not Shaul's midah. How so? He intended to sublimate the midah of Taiva, which sometimes manifests itself in Chesed, and change into Holy Chesed, the Chesed of Kedusha. And that midah of Chesed, here, we're going to see in our parak, had to do with leaving Agog alive. We're going to see that. We're going to expound about that in a couple of minutes. The midah of Malchus, however, is found more in David. David had the capacity to change things over, turn things over, uplift them, and says some tzaddik that has to David's dual personality. David was a very, very passionate person, but he was very, very restrained at the same time. It says that David used to kill people left and right, but only with the permission of Sanhedrin. That's why he's called that Moni, the red one. But Yifeinayim, with beautiful eyes, what does beautiful eyes mean? Enea Eda, the eyes of Sanhedrin. He looked at everything through the looking glass of whether it was L'shem Shamayim or not. He was created. Hashem gave him a special quality, that dual personality of passion and restraint together, which allowed him to be able to use his passion and sublimate it. Sometimes he muffed up too, but to use his passion and sublimate it, he used L'shem Shamayim. That was David HaMelech. An interesting thing is that somebody told me in Purim, I don't remember, somebody was at my house, maybe you were there at the same time, he said that if you take the letters David, Dal Vav Dal, and you combine them with the letters Agog, so each one comes out to seven. Combine Dalet with Gimel, two Dalets and two Gimels, each one is seven. And the Aleph and the Vav, it comes out to seven as well. Right? So what can take an Agog and deal with Agog and bring it to the proper conclusion, in other words, the shlemus of seven, a David? Because every letter of David corresponds and uplifts another letter of Agog. Now, I know it's just a gematria, and gematrias don't necessarily prove anything, but it's a cute one, and it demonstrates a point. Saul felt in dealing with Agag, he had to take the midah of David. That may have been true, but he misused it nonetheless. And David would not have done what Saul did, and we'll have to explain that. But Saul did try to take the midah of David and use it in Agag. How so? So he explains, the mistake of Saul came from a very fascinating thing. It's a monumental chiddush of Reb Tzadok. When Saul saw Agag before him, allegedly the evil king of Amalek, the perpetrator of so many misdeeds and so many atrocities, how could you leave him alive? Where did this Rachmanis come from? Where did the Chemla come from? Saplia. It's an amazing thing. How do you understand? Imagine Hitler comes to your hands in Machshmo and you think, oh, Nebuch has to keep him alive. Shot. Very strange thing. So says of Tzadik, you gotta understand what Agag was. And it's a beautiful point there of Tzadik makes. A couple beautiful points. The first one he makes is Moshe Rabbeinu. When he went out to the desert, he went out into Egypt as a young lad. The first time, what was his first major act? Kill the Egyptian. What did he do before he killed the Egyptian? What did Chazal say? He looked around him. To see if any good would come from this Egyptian. Any good for the end of all, until the end of all generations. He didn't find anything and killed him. No. What do we know about Haman who came from Agag? Bivnei Bon of Shulhaman, Lamdu Tar Bivnei Brak, right? Of Shmuel Bar Shilas, a grandchild somehow of Haman learned Tar Bivnei Brak. Come show, about Ruach HaKadosh. He looks at Agag. He doesn't see Agag. What does he see? He sees Rav Shmuel Bar Shilas. Says, how can I kill this guy? If I kill this guy, there's not going to be any Rav Shmuel Bar Shilas. It was a terrible nisayin for Shaul. Seeing in front of him, not Agag, but seeing Rav Shmuel Bar Shilas. How is he going to kill Agag? That was the nisayin of Shaul. Yes, that's what he assumes. It's a big assumption. But Shaul, we know it's holy. We know he was shot. It's not nevuah. It's a Ruach HaKodesh. In other words, even Bisman HaZeh, we would say about, I shouldn't say Bisman HaZeh, but even after the Chorm Beis HaMikdash, we would say that it's possible for somebody who possesses the Ruach HaKodesh to detect around another individual an aura. It's not an actual nevuah. In fact, I.A. Kaplan describes, I forget which book, I think Meditation in Kabbalah, he describes auras. How to read auras. Not in detail that we could actually do, but he says if you stare at an individual long enough, you'll see like a blue, what's the word? When you look at the sun and an eclipse, that thing around the sun, what's it called? Corona. A blue corona around an individual. And if you stare at that blue corona long enough, I've never tried it. If you stare at that blue corona long enough, you'll begin. If you stare at it long enough, you see that blue corona, and you'll be able to read it and see the individual's aura and sense what the individual is. If you're a Makuba, so I would say that when Shalom, I'm up to probably my outline here. I'm up to point number 18. So seeing when Shaul saw Rav Shmuel Bar Shilas, he perceived Shaul saw Agag. He didn't see Agag in front of him. He saw Rav Shmuel Bar Shilas. He saw the aura of the Kedusha latent even in Amalek at that point, because Bnei Bon of Shaul Haman would be Loimei Torah Bnei Brak. That's point number one. Now, so Shaul was under this terrible Nisayon. So he saw this holiness. How's he going to kill him? What's the answer, Taka? How should he have known better? Lemaisa. Shaul was called on the carpet for this. Why should he have known better? So he says, I'll tell you why. Because the halach is, if a Sanhedrin comes and they judge a woman to be chayav misa, and the woman is pregnant, 9 months pregnant, do we wait till she gives birth? No. We kill her on the spot. We don't, when there is a halacha, Ruach HaKodesh is a nisayon. You hear that, Rabbi Yisai? If there's a halacha which says, kill, then even if your Ruach HaKodesh says, save, you have to listen to the halacha. Says Reb Tzadok, it was a terrible nisayon, and he's going to make the nisayon a lot worse in a couple of minutes. It was a terrible nisayon for Shaul. But Shaul's nisayon was, yes, you will see with your Ruach HaKodesh that in Agag, there is the aura of Reb Shmuel Bar Shilas. Nonetheless, you are commanded to kill him.
Then he's believed without a shloach.
It says Reb Tzadik, the midah of a tzaddik is to sustain the world. Shol, a tzaddik yisod olam. Of course, his entire perspective in this world, sustaining the world. Shol, the great tzaddik, everything is sustaining the world. And certainly, Shol, if he sees Agag and he sees holiness, what is he going to do? He wants to sustain the world. Sees the potential holiness in Agag down the line. Tzadik Yisoid Olam. He for sure is going to want to save Agag. Says Reb Tzadik, to seek to sustain the world in that way is sometimes a mistake. Particularly here, because the kingdom of the world comes by destroying Amalek. And that, says Reb Tzadik, is why at the beginning of this parak you find the word Pekida. Pekadati es asher asa Amalek l'Yisrael. A new era, which is always indicated by the word Pekida, would have been entered upon by Klai Yisrael had Amalek been destroyed. Not a new kingdom of Olam would have been brought about. The world would have entered a much higher astral plane. It would have entered the astral plane of no more Yetzirah. No Amalek, no Yetzirah. The eradication of Amalek would have been the kingdom of Olam. Shaul was misguided. He thought that by keeping Agag alive, that was kingdom of Olam. That was a mistake. Yes.
But what
is if you
leave Agag alive and Agag's descendants
until
alive, that they came
among the Israel? What can you do? But Rav Shmuel Bar Shilas. See, holiness, let that be God's cheshbon.
There was also a tremendous Kiddush Hashem that took place with the Nes of Purim.
The Nes of Purim, the Kiddush Hashem, that's true, you could have perceived that as well. To leave him around when they support him is an interesting idea. In any event, the Ishbitzer himself, from Tzadik's Rebbe, makes the Nisayon even greater. He says, Pshat later in the parak, it says, Vayelech Elov Agog Madonos. Agog went to Shaul Madonos. And Madonos is a strange word, and Chazal interpret that word, the Targum translates that word, Bifankaya, in a very delicate way. So the Ishbitzer says, what does that mean, delicate? What does it mean, Madonos? It means you think Agog looked like Hitler. You think he looked like Eichmann. No. Agog, he looked like Aristotle. He looked like the Dalai Lama. He looked refined. He looked elevated. He looked like a delicate, scholarly, poetic individual. It wasn't Pashut when he saw Agog. Not only did he have the Kedusha of Rav Shmuel Bar Shilas manifest in him, which for sure could perceive Ruach HaKodesh, but he also was a Madonos, a delicate person. He exuded nice, refined, elevated. It's not our idea. When we think of Amalek, we think of Amalek as being, you know, like I said, like a Hitler, right? Like Chveis, Louis Farrakhan. We're not talking about, that's not the case. That's not Yasser Arafat. It's not the case. It's not what Amalek looks like. It's not unshaven. It's not, doesn't wear a bow tie. Because Amalek looks like a Russia Marusha. Amalek looks like a Tzaddik. Doesn't look like a Russia. Looks like Madonos. Not only that, that's again two Nisayim here. Rav Shmuel Bar Shilas Nisayim and the Madonos Nisayim. Besides that, says himself, there's another issue here. The nation pressured him. Vayachmola am alagog. As Reb Tzadik will explain later on, it's not pshat that Shaul was swayed by public opinion. He wasn't, Clinton. He wasn't doing everything he wanted to based on what the public opinion poll said. No. Shaul thought, if the nation sees this, Am Yisrael, Menom Nevi'im Heim, B'nei Nevi'im Heim. If the entirety of the army, of the holy Jewish army, perceives that Gog should be spared, there's got to be something going on here. My sense of his potential Kedusha must be correct. Hi, Shmuel foresaw this and forewarned him. Shmuel said, don't listen to the nation. Lo sachmola, he didn't say that exactly, but he said, lo sachmola love, don't have any chemla. Shmuel Pasuk Gimel tells him, listen, Shaul, there's going to be an Yisrael. You will be sorely tested. Lo sachmola. Don't have any kvetl on it. Make sure. What does Shaul do with the favorite sign of war? Okay. Shaul had a big nisayon. Very big temptation. Oh, the whole business. Lamaisi got nevuah from Shmuel. Shmuel tells him not to. So what does he do with that nevuah? He says, I'm sorry, like an amazing voice. He's amazing. He says that Shaul is so great that the Yetzer Hara could not get him by attempting to do an Avera. With us, how does the Yetzer Hara get us? Yetzer Hara tempts us, tells us, don't get up in the morning, you know, oh, it's so, doesn't have a good Ashgacha, so what? You know, people eat there anyway. It's a Shaila, Mela, and much worse, by Shaul the Yetzer Hara. You can't get it Shaul that way. By Shaul, the Nisayan was in sickness. Chazal tells us that Kohelis is a person goes and says, Alti Tzadik Harbe. That person Kohelis is referring to Shaul. Chazal tells us. Don't be such a big tzadik. Rizadik says, had Kohelis been written in the time of Shaul, Shaul would have known that. Problem was, who wrote Kohelis? Shlomo Amel. So he didn't know yet about this guy about the Tzadik Harbe. But that was Shaul's design. Shaul's test was, are you going to be too big a tzaddik? Are you going to think that your test now is not to follow a nevuah because you perceive with your Ruach HaKodesh and your assessment of the situation that the nevuah is incorrect? You sense, and you're a big tzaddik, that you want to be Mekayim the world and that you're leaving Agog alive Lishma. That gufa, that itself sometimes can be a test, and that was the test of Shaul. And says in Tzadik, the Yetzer Hara generally attacks Tzadikim, not just Shaul, in showing that perceived mitzvos. If you think back and think for a moment, you know, generally, because I know I must have told you this once before, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter says, the Mishnah Pirkei Avos, everybody knows the Mishnah, Kol Machlokes Shesofel, Kol Machlokes Shehem Shamayim, Sofel Yiskayim. Right? So Rabbi Yisrael said that any time the people in the Machlokes think what they're doing is L'Shem Shamayim, you'll never get them to make peace. If they're just fighting for personal animosity and they know that, so eventually you get them to make peace. But if every one of the things that they're L'Shem Shamayim, oh, that's the worst Machlokes. Forget it. Sofel Yiskayim. There's no way anybody will ever make peace in such a Machlokes. So the truth is that that's how the Yetzer Hara gets Tzadikim. It gets them by showing them perceived mitzvos, and they don't make enough of a cheshbon, and they succumb. And says it's sort of an amazing thing. This is basically what he says. I'm paraphrasing, but use American mentality, Star Trek mentality. This is the final frontier of L'Shem Shamayim. The final frontier of whether you're going to do something L'Shem Shamayim is even when you perceive it to be your tafkid in life, your destiny, your purpose, L'Shem Shamayim. Can you stand back a minute and say, but maybe not. Maybe I shouldn't be doing it. And he says, this is really what happened at Dar Kedah. At Dar Kedah, the Nisayon, what was the Nisayon of Avraham Avinu? The love for his son. Yeah, easy Nisayon for Avraham Avinu. The Nisayon was, V'eschol goy godol, V'avarecha v'agav l'shemecha. The Nisayon was the creation of Am Yisrael. The Nisayon was the Kabbalah Satorah, the Tikkun of the world. That was what was in balance. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Avraham Avinu's Nisayon was, do I listen to this Nevuah? What about my first Nevuah, the Nevuah of Lech Lecha? How can I possibly listen to the Nevuah now to be Shechti Yitzchak if I have an original Nevuah? The Nisayon was in a L'Shem Shamayim. What is he going to do? Either choice on the balance scale was a L'Shem Shamayim Dika choice. That's the worst nisayon. That's where how tzaddikim are tested. The ultimate nisayon of two l'shem shemayim nisayonis. How do you the two l'shem shemayim possibilities? How do you pick the right one? By shol is even worse, because by shol he sensed right now that this is what he's supposed to do, and he was impressed upon him by the nation. All that. By the way, just as an aside, Reb Tzadok says here too. David's nisayon was similar, the one David failed with Bathsheba. Because he felt, he sensed that Bathsheba was intended for him. He had that Ruach HaKodesh, perceived this as a Bashir for him. Therefore, he succumbed to the nisayon. He shouldn't have. Obviously, it was a mistake. Shouldn't have waited, should have waited until it was the right time. But that was, it was a big nisayon for David. Not as much nisayon because he had that sense of Itaka is the Ratzon Hashem that at some point he have a relationship with this woman. Okay? So here again, shows that the test was whether he's going to trust his own cheshbonus or listen to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's nevuah through Shmuel. David, although he failed in one nisayon, did tshuva. And David represents eternal malchus and not Shaul. Why is that? Says Reb Tzadok, because David's level was tefillah. David says one place, vani tefillah, vani tefillah, see the chasher meis ratzon. Says another place, I think through the words literally, vani tefillah. How David HaMelech represents to us a mispalel. A mispalel, somebody who davens and davens and davens and says to him all day, what he's doing is completely putting himself at God's disposal and completely devoting himself to Hashem. What David is saying is, I can't make any cheshbonos. I'm a spalel to you, please show me the way. That is the type of melech which we want. Shaul, evident manifested leadership, he made a snap judgment on the spot with Agog. But that wasn't the right kind of leadership, because the leadership we want you to display when there's a direct prophecy from God is to be misbalo or to follow Shmuel's nevuah, but not to make that kind of decision. That was the wrong thing to do.
Furthermore, when Shaul's faith was shown to him by Shmuel,
yes,
at first
he denied. Doesn't realize it's a chait. Right. Right, because he didn't realize.
There's no sense of tshuva.
He didn't realize what he had done wrong. It was a very difficult nisayon.
Whereas
David immediately. That was his difference. That's true. David was easy. David's personality was one in which it was easy for him. And as a seclusion, but here it was bad for him. It led him astray. The Aveiro after he committed it. Now, Amalek is therefore, just to sum up before we go on to the next point, Amalek is not like the other nations. They do not entice to do evil, but rather they manifest that evil is good. That's part of Amalek as well. That which Shaul was tested, whether he would give in to do something which looked like good, but wasn't the good of the moment, the right good in the moment, it's really what Amalek does all the time. It says about Esav, the Gemara in Baba Kama says, Esav is pushet lafaim. Esav spreads out his hooves and says, look, they're split like a pig. I'm kosher. We mentioned this already a couple of weeks ago. Esav, he doesn't come into the Beit Medrash looking like a chveis, like a shlub, or like Arafat, or like whatever. He comes in looking at the Beit Medrash like a Rosh Hashiva. He comes in like Rav Shach, like Lubavitcher Rebbe, like Rav Moshe. That's how Esav comes in, with the frock, with the Hamburg. He comes in like a chazer, and says Rav Tzadok. He doesn't come and tell you, come have the cheeseburger. Yeah, that would be easy to have avoid. That's not an Nisayon. He comes and tells you, come with me. We'll go do this L'Shem Shamayim. We'll learn Torah a little bit differently. We'll be Mekayim Mitzvahs a little bit differently. We'll do Chesed a little bit differently. We'll do a Chesed of keeping Agog alive. Yom Atrom Ayom Omer Lo Kach Mochram Lo Kach Lamochar Hole Omer Lo Lech Avod Avodah Zarah. That's a gradual process, and it starts with enticing a person to do good, but not good which is Ratzon Hashem at that moment. That's Amalek. So come here, and Shaul knows this. So it's been forewarned. Lo sachmo lo rav. It's going to be a terrible, terrible nisayon. It's going to be, you know, like what's his name, Lahavdil, in the Greek myth. There's a guy with the sirens and he had the stuff up his ears. Homer, I forget which one it was in the Odyssey.
Odysseus.
He had to write this because the terrible nisayon. How's he not going to fall for this temptation? But nonetheless, despite that, he was led astray by the nation. Now, by the Chemlasam. Now, as we mentioned before, this is still problematic. Because Shaul, how's he going to do with the fact that Shmuel made a nevuah? Shmuel told him, and Shmuel Anovi. Right?
It's the same kind of thing as that. Yeah. Because what Rabin was doing, he thought was the Shem Shammai.
Yeah.
And,
Well, that's making a political judgment. We don't have any Navi who's standing in counterbalance to Rabin. So that here we had a Navi. It's a bigger kasha. So here a Navi. I know the people in Yeshua. Some of them think they're Navin, but none of them so far have gotten that Madrega. But in any event, what did he do with the Nevuah of Shmuel? So says Ripsodik, amazing thing. This is all classic Ripsodik. He says, we have a passion to have Navi Sheker. A Navi is going to come to you and says, Lech Avoy Avoy Zara. It doesn't say in the Torah, a charlatan comes to you and says that. It says a Navi comes to you and says that. What does that mean, says the Tzaddik? It means it's possible to have a person who's a Navi who's going to come and tell you, Lech Avoy Avoy Zara. And the Torah says, "Lo tishmal divrei anavi yahu." It's a nisayon. It's a test. He's a navi. You perceive him to be a navi. Don't listen. That's not Yoshka coming. Says Shaul thought. It's not talking about Yoshka coming and saying of lech avod avod azar. It's even Shmuel a navi. Hi, Shmuel here is not saying to be avod avod azar, but maybe says Shaul extrapolated from that parsha and said, just like it says there, a navi might come one day and say lech avod avod azar. Maybe Shmuel's making a mistake. Maybe when Shmuel said, Lo Sachmol Alav, Shmuel's like a Navi Sheker sent for an Isayim. And that's why he later comes and says, with this says himself, we understand why he relied on the nation. When the Am was Chomel on Agog, it was assigned to him. Because he says, look, Ramsadik says, it wasn't tying Pikuach Nefesh. It wasn't saying, well, the nation's going to kill me if I kill Dagog. Had he tied such a taina, Hitaka would have been justified. Because after all, Pikuach Nefesh is doing all the mitzvahs, Hitaka would not have had to kill Dagog under those circumstances. He wasn't saying Pikuach Nefesh. What he was saying was, Shmuel, I thought your Nevuah was wrong. What was my basis for understanding that the nation was Chomel. Chaisro, B'nei Nevi'im, they're Chomel. What can I conclude as a result? Your Nevuah is wrong. Lemay said it's a misinterpretation of the Pasuk. What the Pasuk is telling you is that if a Navi tells you to be Ovid Avodah Zarah and only to be Ovid Avodah Zarah, or to change one of the mitzvahs of the Torah permanently, then don't listen to him. But if a Navi tells you anything else, that he's a Mukhsa to be a Navi, then Taki have to listen to him. Even if he tells you temporarily, as we know, to transgress one of the mitzvahs of the Torah, such as Elion Har Carmel saying to be Makri B'Shas Yisr Bamos, you listen to him. So that's Taka, why they should have he should have listened to Shaul. And says Reb Tzaddik, it's his Yiras, Shaul's Yiras Hashem linked to his Ruach HaKodesh is what caused his restraint, his refusal to kill Amalek, and it was he, by this path which he took, which caused the nation to be Chomel and Amalek. What does he mean? He says, Shaul got cause and effect mixed up. Shaul thought the cause is the nation is being Chomel, therefore I have to listen and not kill Agog. No, in reality, says Ripsodik, the cause was since Shaul was Chomel in his heart, mistakenly, that's why the nation was Chomel as well. Why? Because the Melech is the heart of the nation. the Melech's leadership, both mystically and rationally, impacts on the rest of the nation. Therefore, Shaul was reading the nation. But he was really just, the nation was just reflecting him. The chemla of everybody else came from his chemla. Not that they were to be an independent barometer. A king cannot rely on what the nation is doing to gauge, again, non-Clintonian. A king cannot rely on the nation to decide where to go. Because the nation will reflect him. He has to lead the nation. How does he lead the nation? Like David HaMelech, by being drawn completely after Ratzon Hashem. By canceling any personal cheshbonos and just following Ratzon Hashem. That's what David HaMelech did. That's not what Shaul did. Shaul didn't have that capacity. Shaul was a great tzaddik. But he wasn't completely given over, his heart given over into the hands of Hashem. He made cheshbonos. He made cheshbonos of tzidkus. That says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, or Shlomo HaMelech says Ati Tzadik Harbe. And says of Tzadik again, he stresses again like he stressed before, Hashem only tests great tzaddikim. It's a major test. It's a test which almost impossible to pass. But that's life. You want to be a tzaddik like Shaul, or if you are a tzaddik, that's where you get tested. Finally, to tie up some loose ends, we got a problem, which is that after all, the Shaul was such a good, so Shaul was right, and he perceived in Agog with Shmuel Bar Shilas. So Taka, what was the Avamina to kill him? Why is he commanded to kill him? So he mentioned before, just Allah, his justification of that is that a Sanhedrin, if they have a pregnant woman, even if they know she's going to give birth within a few hours, she's Chayev Esmi, so they kill her on the spot. When it comes to Mishpatei HaTorah, to Torah judgment and Torah law, we don't take Ruach HaKodesh into Cheshbonos. We become Misnagdim, not Chassidim. Right? So, but what taka? What was Hashem going to do with Rav Shmuel Bar Shilas? So this Ripsogs is an amazing thing. I don't fully understand it, but it's a powerful mahalach and it's worth considering. He says, God l'chatchila did not want the tikkun of Amalek to come about by Rav Shmuel Bar Shilas. That was not the primary intent. The primary way of being misakin Amalek is chop chop, getting rid of them, killing them, eradicating them, destroying that pervasive tumor. When that's not done, for whatever reason, there after all is some good in Amalek. Not real good, but they do serve a purpose in the world. The purpose is to give Klai Yisrael reward. The purpose is to give us a Nisayon, to serve as our springboard for Avodas Hashem in this world. So there is some element of good in Amalek. Now, the best way to get that good is by eradicating the Yetzirah, just destroying it. However, if the Yetzirah cannot be destroyed, if Amalek cannot be destroyed, it's got to come into play. The good has to be uplifted in some other way. What's the other way? Says the Tzadik through Rav Shmuel Bar Shilas. That's a bedievit. The chatchila way of dealing with Amalek, of doing the problem with Amalek, is by destroying. Bedievit? Bnei Ban of Shohaman, Lom the Torah B'Vnei Brach. And says the Tzadik, you know how I know it's a bedievit? But he can't prove this for certainty, but he says he's sure that Rav Shmuel Bar Shilas did not come about via Gerus. A Gerus, a positive act of formally joining Klal Yisrael, would certainly indicate a positive Ratzon Hashem. But there's Aloha in Calvin Gerim Amalek. We're not allowed to accept Gerim from Amalek. So says the Tzadik, he's certain, I don't know if he has other rights, but he says he's certain that the way Amalek entered Klal Yisrael, the way Rav Shmuel Bar Shilas was conceived, was that a Goy raped a Jewish woman. And his right is, from Rav Shmuel Bar Shilas, that Shilas is the mother's name, not the father's name. So you see from this, says the Tzadik, that it wasn't the Ratzon Hashem. Because where it's positive Ratzon Hashem, where it's a l'chatchila, that's the preferred way something should happen. It would come about in a nice way, in a good way. If it comes about in a bad way, like by a goy having relations with a Jewish woman, so that means it's not the direct Ratzon Hashem. It's a b'dievet. He says a similar thing about Haman and Esther, getting back to the point you made before. He says, if that whole Purim miracle was l'chatchila, then it wouldn't have happened with Esther having to be taken by this goyach Hashverosh to his palace. It's also a kilachayad, you know, backhanded miracle. It's true, Purim is one of the more fundamental days in the Jewish calendar. But there would have been perhaps an even more fundamental day had Shaul destroyed Amalek when he was supposed to destroy Amalek. Since he didn't, there had to be other things. There had to be Rosh Shmuel Bar Shilas. And not bad guy, Rav Shmuel Bar Shilas. We like him. And Purim, not a bad day. We certainly like Purim, we like Esther. But l'chatchila, that wasn't, that did not have to be the case. And finally, bringing, coming back full.
There's one other point.
Yeah.
That we have in Sefer Devarim, a Nebuah, that the Melchamas Amalek is Midor Dor.
Dor Dor. Yeah.
So maybe he felt
that's
that.
That's in Shach. Shmos.
Oh, that's in Shmos?
Yeah, Hashem Amalek Dor. Yeah, yeah.
But, okay, if it's Midor Dor, then it has to be ongoing, and it can't end with
No, had it end, then that would have been the Gula. Shaul would have been like Moshiach ben Yosef, and David would have been much like Moshiach ben David. That would have been it. The building of the Beis HaMikdash would have been the eternal Beis HaMikdash. It was not meant to be, obviously. And Hashem obviously knew it wasn't meant to be. But that was, it was a potential. That was the Pekidah. Hashem, so to speak, knocking at the door and saying, okay, maybe we can change things. And that's why the
Pirates.
Right. Achris Hayamim. The definition of Achris Hayamim is when Amalek is destroyed. That defines Achris Hayamim. When that occurs, when Amalek is destroyed, that it will be your sign that it's the times of Mashiach. Okay. In any event, and that's why, to come full circle, that's why the parak begins with the word Tzvakos. The first, I'm sorry, not the parak, but the Nevuah in Pasuk Beis begins with the word Tzvakos. Again, the first Nevuah we have in Tanakh with the word Tzvakos. Tzvakos comes from the word Tzvaos. Tzvaos means hosts, armies. Normally, Tzvaos represents also, similar to where Bor Fakadati, a new opening of a new gate in Klaitzol's history, but one which manifests a multiplicity of roles. A new role opening up for human beings. Such as when Hannah brought Shmuel to the world, she was the first person to use the Shem Hashem of Tzvakos. She was indicating that now it's going to be a new role in Klai Yisrael, the role of Nevuah. Till now Nevuah was very rare, now Nevuah will become more widespread. Here, says Rav Tzadok, the Tzvakos used in this pasuk indicates that there would be more hosts of Klai Yisrael via the destruction of Amalek. The Tzivos of Am Yisrael would be enhanced in a quantum fashion by the destruction of Amalek. It didn't happen. But that was the intent when Ashmuel used the word Tzvakos. L'maisa! Even though it didn't happen in the intended, the way it happened in an unintended way, as always happens. Just like Adam Arishon's, this is a very classic Tzadokian concept, try and compress into a couple of minutes which we have left, says just like by Adam Arishon, it's true Adam Arishon muffed up, but the entire tapestry of history came about as a result, which was a madrega, a mila. Just like when the Churban HaBayis occurred, it was a mess up. But the entire tapestry of Talmud Bavli and all the rich wealth of Golas came out as a result. And it's true that Shaul messed up. As a result of Shaul messing up, we had Takar of Shmuel Bar Shilas, and we had a Purim. So it's the L'chatchila and B'dievet here are somewhat fungible. Here we say by the L'chatchila, yeah, L'chatchila Banu Marisha would have been that he did not eat from the Eitz Hadas. But was that, is that really what the Ratzon Hashem was? Or was the Ratzon Hashem really that there will be a slip-up? And in the darkness there will be light. Out of the darkness of that sin there will come the light of all of Jewish history. And out of the darkness of the Churban will come with the light of all the Kiddush Hashem, both literally and figuratively of the Golus. And out of the darkness of Shaul's sin will come all the light of Am Yisrael's history and Purim and all the vanquishing Amalek for all time, which is in of itself not perhaps the direct fulfillment of Tzvos, but an indirect fulfillment of Tzvos. Okay, it's late. We didn't get to do any Nach tonight. Just want to finish with one thing, which we'll take pick up next week. We really, this is just to show the transition in this Perek in Yonah Diyoma between Purim and Pesach. Tonight we spoke a little about Purim. Next Pasuk speaks about Pesach. Pasuk Dalit. Vayishama Shol Asam. Shol account of discipline the nation. You know, brought them to order. Ambifkad, as they say in the, you know, in the Israeli army, brought them to whatever that's called, revels, and they muster the troops. Whatever it is. So Batloim, and he counted them with sheep, Masayim Elef Ragli, Masayim 200,000 men, 10,000 men just from Judah, a massive army. How do you count them? Of course you can't count Jews directly with the census, so I count them Batloim. What is Tloim says the Targum here, if you take back a look, Umaninun be Imre Pischaya. He counted them by issuing each one of them the Korban Pesach. When did the Milchama take place? Erev Pesach. Why? Come back next week.